Welcome, everybody, to another edition of Break Fake Rules. We are so excited because we're joined today by Priscilla Enriquez from the McClatchy Foundation, J.B. McClatchy Foundation?
Yes, James B.
And I really wanted to have you on the show for a couple of reasons. One is Priscilla and I have had the great honor of being on what's called the Spend Down Roadshow. Whenever somebody wants someone to speak about a Spend Down Foundation, they call one of us. And if we're lucky, we get to be on the same stage together.
And here we are.
And so I've learned so much from Priscilla. So welcome to the show. Welcome to Break Fake Rules.
Thank you for having me.
And I have to say, you're one of the best at breaking them. I really appreciate that.
Okay.
So we're really excited to have you on. Why don't you tell us a little about the McClatchy Foundation, get us started with that?
Sure. It was founded in 1994 by James B. McClatchy and his wife, Susan. And at the time, it was called the Central Valley Foundation. James was born in Sacramento, but raised in Fresno. Has a deep love for California Central Valley, and they focused on the needs of English learners and the First Amendment. James comes from the McClatchy media family empire, if you will.
Right.
And fast forward to 2019, I came on board. They actually had decided to spend down in 2016, and just sort of been doing a lot of impactful grant making on the English learner side, less so on the First Amendment side. So when I came on board, there was a lot of fast learning and getting to know the Valley, and we changed our name to James B. McClatchy Sunset. Susan said, you know, he was never the type of person who wanted a monument to himself, but because we're spending down, he would approve.
Okay, let's take a quick step back because, you know, we have millions and millions of viewers right now, and they're probably wondering, what is a spend down?
What is a spend down? Well, a spend down...
And you don't even call it a spend down.
No, we call
it... You are anti-spend down.
Well, yeah, we're calling it a sunrise.
Sunrise.
Because
very nice.
The Central Valley has lacked philanthropic investment for decades. And we see this opportunity to really leverage greater investment from philanthropy. And that's why we call it a sunrise. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think in philanthropy writ large, when you think of a sunsetting foundation or spend down, people don't see that as a great opportunity to make change. You know, they think of it, oh, well, you're just going to spend all the assets, which is true. But for us, because of the lack of investment, we really want to leverage and be strategic with our spend down. So that's why we're calling it a sunrise. So it feels really hopeful and, you know, creating a new day for investment in the Central Valley.
Well, I'm such a follower that I'm probably going to keep saying spend down. So I'm sorry if I do that to you.
Okay.
You can correct me. So my view, when I think about foundation rules, the number one fake rule is perpetuity. It's the number one fake rule. Like, such a fake rule that when someone creates a foundation, they don't even ask themselves or their tax advisor, who usually sets these things up, doesn't say, do you want to make this a foundation that lives forever? They just assume that they want to. So what happened at the McClatchys? They must have just been off. What are they thinking to do something called a spend down or a sunrise? What happened there?
Yeah. Well, they realized that the needs in the Valley are urgent and are happening right now. And so why wait to try to do something about it versus doing something right now?
Right.
And they felt that the spend down, the sunset, spending all the resources today would actually be impactful and make a difference. And so I've embraced that when I came on board, and I've also embraced the fact that there's not a lot of investment by philanthropy in the Central Valley, which I think is the future for the state of California. You know, it's the America's heartland, it's the center of food and ag, and huge immigrant population. You know, we have farm workers who break their backs to put food on our table. And, you know, they suffer a lot of injustice.
Yeah.
And so, you know, with the sunset, we see this as an opportunity, not just to leverage, but to really give visibility to all of these pressing issues in our state.
So, I mean, you've broken this big rule. Does this sunrise rule break create more problems for you or more excitement or something of both?
It's funny. I've been using this word a lot. It's been really liberating.
Why is that?
Because you're challenging all of these fake rules. You realize that we have such wealth in this country, and yet philanthropy has created this fake scarcity mindset and, you know, caused harm among nonprofits, among our nonprofit leaders in the community, you know, whether inadvertently or on purpose, but by having this idea that there's not enough resources is a lie. You know, we have so much wealth in this country, and yet we only grant out the minimum, right?
And so that minimum is?
5%.
5% of what? It's like the...
whatever the entire corpus of the foundation's assets
in a given year.
Yeah, in a given year.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's the minimum, and yet what happens? These foundations, what do they do with that? They call it the maximum, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so.
Then the 95%, what's going on there?
Well, you know, you grow the wealth, which is the perpetuity mindset, right? And so, you know, I've been in philanthropy for a long time, and you plan, you know, you take 2, 3, 4, 5 years to plan these strategic plans, and you make these investments only to try to invest more later for later versus today.
Right.
You know, so imagine if philanthropy gave, I don't know, 0.5% more than what they're giving. What could happen?
What could happen?
Yeah. And
yeah,
I'm just saying 0.5%.
You know? I agree. And that what's interesting about what you're saying with respect to urgency, I have not come across any issue area or anyone who works in an issue. By that I mean an issue being, for example, climate. So I have yet to work with someone in climate who has said, you know, I think that foundations could really take it easy in the early stages of this climate crisis. They should focus for problems down the road.
Right.
That's where the real work is. So let's not do as much now. Let's keep it at 5% because later we're going to need them. And they're right. We will need them because we're not doing, in my view, enough now.
Yeah.
What's your take on that?
Problems are going to get worse if you don't invest today.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're stuck in our own infrastructure that we've created and
mm-hmm.
we've bought into it. And if we were just to take a pause and just think about that for a moment, what could you do more today to mitigate the problems down the road? I mean, we could solve a lot right now.
And so let's talk about that. You're in the Central Valley.
Yep.
Is it a fake rule to not invest in the Central Valley?
That's a really good question.
Like, what? Why haven't people come to Central Valley? You've made a hell of a case here in just a matter of seconds.
Yeah.
You said, look, this is the breadbasket. This is where people are, you know, working their asses off. They're not getting anything, and on and on and on. And you've said something quite innovative, if not controversial. This is the future of California, Central Valley. So what's the fake rule that prevents us from going there?
I think people don't know enough about the Central Valley. So part of my mission, if you will, is to give visibility to the people in the place. And if folks would just drive the 99 along the 99 spine from Stockton all the way down to Bakersfield, you know, you see the air, which is horrible, really poor air quality. You see the farmland, you see the traffic, you see the conditions of the roads. You know, this is still a big part of the state of California. So I think the fake rule is, you know, obviously philanthropy likes to give where their place is. So, you know, think beyond the boundaries, your geographic boundaries of where you're placed. Think about the future of the state of California, which is in the valley.
Yeah, I just recently heard someone from the center of the United States say, all the philanthropy is on the coasts. That's because that's where you live. That's what you think is the world. And for that reason, that you give there. But it's not that far from the coast that we're talking here.
No,
the Central Valley of California is not that far. And yet you're having to make a really big case to get, you know, place-based folks like us to take a look at the Central Valley.
Right. What folks don't realize, when philanthropy invests where they live, they create a strong leadership and nonprofit infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
When you don't invest in that, in other places, that infrastructure is incredibly weak. And that's what you see in the Central Valley. You don't see a strong nonprofit infrastructure. You don't see that many local leaders who need development, or they just need to be lifted up. They have the assets there already, but they need their own infrastructure and their own ecosystem to thrive. And that's what philanthropy can do, is to help create that ecosystem.
Mm-hmm. So let's review here. The first major rule you've broken is, we're not going to do this thing in perpetuity.
Correct.
We're going out as quickly as we can.
Yeah.
And that's always a debatable point within our spend sunrise world.
Then
the next one is, look, geographically, we're going to focus on an area that people don't see and don't focus on. We're going to raise the volume. We're going to go there. So a couple trends, a couple practices, you're breaking them. What's a third one? Mm-hmm. You mentioned speech, media. What's a fake rule that you see in that world, which is a cornerstone of a democratic society?
Well, the decline of local journalism, for one. I mean, that's something that we've taken the term First Amendment and talked about a multiracial democracy in California's Central Valley, centering multilingual learners, the next generation of inclusive leaders, and a community-powered local journalism infrastructure. And when you don't have local, fact-based, quality news being reported, you're left to propaganda on TV. And there's also the rise in the power of social media and a lot of fake news that's being broadcast that people, I mean, that's what they see. You know, they read the headlines and they believe it. And so we're trying to reverse that trend by hiring local people who come from the community, who speak the language of the vast majority of residents who may live in a community, so they can participate in their own local democracy, because that's where change can happen.
How does that play out philanthropically? So when you think about making grants to advance a multiracial democracy through a media play, what does that look like?
Generally for us, it's funding grassroots organizations, it's funding grassroots leaders, BIPOC-led organizations. In our first round of grant making, when we were sort of testing the waters, it was astonishing to us that we found that 39% of our pilot grantees were unpaid, underpaid, BIPOC leaders, mostly women of color. You know, that's an injustice. And so we want to reverse that trend, you know, pay these leaders, pay them a good, livable, competitive wage as well. But behind that, there's a whole other architecture that has to be built to lift that up.
And what does that require?
It requires boards, you know, to be a little more sophisticated in terms of the value of relying on a paid staff versus being all volunteer-led, which is wonderful. I'm not dissing, you know, volunteer organizations. But if you want a strong nonprofit infrastructure, you need paid staff. You do.
Yeah, I agree. And the way that foundations have typically acted, because they're locking it down to 5%, they're not doing more.
They're not doing more. Another fake rule is, you know, operational grants, multi-year grant making, funding salaries. Let's fund salaries. Let's pay people.
Yeah.
You know, let's lift people up.
Yeah, whenever we're in a conversation about the deprivation that's created by foundations, and deprivation in this case meaning we deprive communities of capital we have available, the question that always comes up for me, and what we tend to use here at Stubsky as our guiding mantra, is it more important for us to hold on to this money or to give it over to the frontline organizations that are actually doing it? By and large, it's a hard argument to make that we should be holding on to it, the foundation, and not a frontline community.
I would agree.
And what does that mean to the communities you work with if the foundation is moving this much more aggressively, your foundation in particular?
Well, I mean, they can act. You know, they can actually execute the dreams that they've been thinking about if only we had the resources, right?
Right.
You know, everyone says that. And they could start lifting up their local community and organizing people, organizing parents, organizing youth. Why sit on this and then just disperse it at a minimum every year?
Right.
It just doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
There's valid reasons to have a rich philanthropic sector, right? But imagine if more funders actually move the needle a little bit and actually granted more beyond the 5%. It would be interesting to know, like in the state of California, what is the payout, right?
It would be a lot higher.
Yeah.
I mean, all we've been thinking about here is, you know, what percentage. I think there is a risk, and I don't mean to get too technical because I'm a huge believer. I've said many times publicly, I'm taking down one foundation and I hope to take down many more. Maybe, if someone will hire me again. But there is an issue, I think, with trying to go to a higher minimum. As much as I want that, if a foundation is determined to live in perpetuity and you set the minimum at 7 or 8%, then what are they going to invest in to stay in perpetuity? And that's where I think it gets tricky.
Yeah, yeah.
If you go back in time to 1960s or so, there was a senator who went by the name of Gore, not Al, his dad, who said that any foundation created should only live for 25 years maximum.
Wow.
And it was almost in the bill that became the guiding law of our sector, but it was blocked out.
Wow.
So I could see that being the way to go, but I am nervous about going too high and foundations being too determined to stay in perpetuity. We get into some dangerous places.
Yeah, I mean, like I said earlier, like if funders gave a 0.5% more than what they're giving now. Or just do the math, you know, how much more could you move in your own community? I think most funders probably would.
When you talk to staff who work at perpetual foundations, what do you generally hear from them about? What are their fears of their, what if one day the donor woke up like yours did and said, I think we want to spend it down. What are they afraid of?
Well,
or are they?
It's interesting. When I said being a spend down is liberating, we have taken on a different set of values and a different way of interrelating with our community and with each other. And mm-hmm. we've almost adopted a new language and vocabulary that doesn't exist in, you know, traditional foundations. And so when I'm in a space, or even my staff are in spaces with traditional funders, it's actually kind of hard because folks limit themselves on what they actually can do. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of the harm that philanthropy has caused, that you have these amazing, incredible, smart people working in foundations, but they've limited themselves in terms of how far they can think and even dream to push money out the door to really create change in their community. And I'm not saying change is not happening, you know, but we've created a different culture.
So let me ask you this. This is what was really on my mind, is the big question we get at Spend Down Foundations, which is, especially you working in the Central Valley, and I think you're one of very few donors there, what happens when you go away?
Well, we hope to create change at the local level. So the people who actually have the ideas and talents now will have resources to act on them. And then we hope that by doing that, we can inspire other philanthropy to continue that work too. Mm-hmm. So we're going to be as loud as possible on that front, because and loud about, you know, we are spending down and using this moment to ignite more philanthropy, but really lift the people who live there, who are going to stay there, who are going to make change there. So it's just giving them the resources to really activate that and amplify that.
So we start with the spend down.
Yeah.
We start with getting involved in community and looking toward communities that are not receiving funding like mm-hmm. others are. So that's the Central mm-hmm. Valley story. Media and the importance of media yep. as a strategy for addressing big disparities in who gets their say in a democracy.
Yes.
These are not small,
no,
big rules.
And there's one more.
And I was going to ask you, what's the next one? What's the final five? What closes us out today?
Is to fund the people. And so the thing about the Valley is there are so many... there's lots of small towns, you know, that are really rich in terms of the people who live there. And there's not a lot of nonprofits, right? And so how can we help people who live there have agency to show up at a Board of Supervisors meeting and ask for what they need? The flooding in Planada that happened at the beginning of the year is a great example of that. It was... The community is mostly Latino and farm workers, and they're still waiting for money. There's been a lot of money thrown at the problem, but they're still waiting, right? Mm-hmm. So how can we help the residents there in the absence of a nonprofit infrastructure? So find a way to fund the people.
Wow. So how do you do that?
You know, I think one of the things we're looking at, too, in our Sunrise is policy and advocacy,
mm-hmm.
you know, and how we can try to find ways to fund both people and organizations to take a look at ways to lift up their own communities from that lens. So we're learning.
Well, thank you very much, Priscilla. It was great to have you here. And thank you so much for joining us for another edition of Break Fake Rules. We'll be back with many more, so stay tuned.
Next time on Break Fake Rules, you'll hear from my good friend Carmen Rojas, president and CEO of the Marguerite Casey Foundation. She questions, whose money is this anyway, and shares an inspiring call to action to create a truly equitable democracy.
We only see one side of the story, which is the giving of money, but not the getting of money.
Thank you for tuning in to Break Fake Rules. This show is brought to you by the Stubsky Foundation, where we are returning all our resources to the communities we call home in Hawaii and the San Francisco Bay Area by 2029. Our producer extraordinaire is Claire Callahan. The show is mixed and edited by Patrick Childers of Odd Conduit Media. Special thanks to our videographers and visual production team who fly from all over the world to be a part of this, Steve Johnson and Brooke Van Dam of Sea Boundless. Subscribe to the Stubsky Foundation YouTube channel to watch videos of each episode. You can find us on YouTube by searching Stubsky Foundation. We hope these conversations don't end here, so join the conversation with me on LinkedIn.